This is March 5th in the year 2001, and this is Bob Gilgore interviewing Diane Pleasure at her home at 530 Piney Mountain Road. Good evening, Diane.
Good evening.
First, I want to thank you for giving me your time. I know you're a busy lady, a recent award winner. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
That's really quite a nice honor at your young age.
Yes, it is.
With some real big people out there.
I agree.
I'll begin with just a broad question, and we'll go from there. It is, what was it like growing up in Chapel Hill?
Well, my remembrances of growing up in Chapel Hill were just days of delight. I had an extremely exciting and loving childhood, very loving parents, wonderful neighbors that we lived beside. When we lived in town on Caldwell Street, and then when we moved here on Piney Mountain Road, it was always fun and excitement. Kids my own age, and you know, we were all either between, you know, 16 all the way down to 6, you know, we all were, had waited for a summer break to be out so that we could all ride our bicycles and play in the woods. One Christmas, everybody in the neighborhood, everybody on the hill got a bicycle, so you could see us riding up and down the dirt road with our bicycles, and we'd come back home with just filthy dirty from riding up and down the dirt road with our bicycles all day long. But, you know, the wonderful, exciting childhood, loving childhood. Chapel Hill was very interesting in that we went to the Hargrave Center in the summer, summer camp, swimming, and just, you know, play with our friends. Those are the kind of memories that I remember. We were a very close-knit family, visited with our mother's family many, many times during the summer, and when we had breaks, traveling to my father's family in Virginia. You know, it was all about family, and we were all very close. We had no family in this area other than our uncle and aunt in Durham, who we saw frequently because he was a doctor, and mother would always take us there for physicals, and all of our other doctors were in Durham. That's where all the African-American doctors were, so we had all African-American doctors. So all of our doctors were in Durham. Very involved in the church, very involved in the church. Some summer we would go to church retreats, we would go to church conventions, we would attend, you know, Sunday school, and go to Bible school, and you know, we were very, very involved in church activities because those were the outside activities. I was a Girl Scout, which was really out of the norm for a lot of little black girls, because there were not a lot of little black girls that were Girl Scouts. I actually went all the way up to cadets, and some of my friends now don't even know that I was a Girl Scout in high school. And you know, I told a friend the other day that I went all the way through cadet, and she was like, "I never knew that. I never wore my uniform to school, you know, that type of thing, but I was." But I was a Girl Scout, which I loved, and it was integrated scout troop. I never was involved in a segregated scout troop. It was always an integrated scout troop. And so my involvement with white people was very, very early on in my childhood. And always had lots of white friends through elementary school. Lots of white friends. We, you know, had sleepovers. Although I never had white friends sleep at my house. I always slept at their house.
Why didn't they sleep here?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I probably didn't invite them. I don't remember inviting them. I was always invited to their house, but I don't think I ever invited them. But I did have, I remember having, when I was a cheerleader, I remember having get-togethers for the cheerleaders, which they were black and white here at my home, and the basketball players. I even have pictures of that in my photo album, with all of us in the front yard taking pictures, and it was the black cheerleaders and the white cheerleaders and the black players and the white players. And I know some of them probably don't even remember that to this day.
So you were a cheerleader at Chapel Hill High School?
Yep, and at Phillips Junior High.
And
So to this day, I had a wonderful childhood until my father passed away when I was in high school, when I went to high school in the I was only with him for a short while in the 10th grade. He passed away when I was in the 10th grade. And I was always looking so forward to being at the high school, knowing that my father was in the high school. And he was not coaching then. He had just stopped coaching and was just teaching. He was teaching, he basically was teaching driver's ed and I think history, something like that. But it was during when he was ill and he had cut back his schedule and that type of thing. So I always look forward to coming to the high school, and so I wasn't there long, just a few months in 10th grade before he passed. So childhood to me was just a childhood. I just had loving parents and always thought all was well.
When did you move from Caldwell Street out here to Pine Mountain?
Right when I was going to the fourth grade. Probably third grade. Let me see. So I would have been 10, whatever age you are in the third grade. And I was supposed to go to Estes Hills that year, and I didn't want to go. That's really integration started up. So my parents made it so that I could stay at Freeport of Graham another year. But I had to go to Estes Hills that very next year, which was, it was traumatic. I remember my fourth grade teacher who I didn't like. And I had some problems. I used to talk a lot, you know. And I think that was probably just my way of getting attention or whatever. But by fifth grade, I guess I had pretty much adjusted to school, pretty much adjusted to school. And from that point on, because we had lots of neighborhood kids and I had gotten to know the neighborhood, gotten to know the kids on the bus, and I guess it seemed like it was fine. Didn't have a lot of problems.
First 3 years you went to Frankfort.
Mm-hmm. Because we lived on Caldwell Street, yeah, and it was all black.
Oh, okay.
It was all black.
So, was that a walk for you?
Oh, no.
They picked you up?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. My mother, during that time, I think my mother was teaching or working at Freeport of Graham, so I think we traveled by that way, or either my parents took us.
What did your mother do there?
Well, when she first started working, she was working in the as a supervisor in the cafeteria. Her bachelor's degree was in home economics, and that's pretty much how she got started in the school system. And then she went on to begin working in teaching special education.
Did she get any training from Frances Hargraves, who was into special ed?
I wouldn't be surprised, because Frances was our neighbor, so we lived right beside them, you know. So they were really embraced our family when we moved to Chapel Hill.
Now, you called her Aunt Frances, but mm-hmm. she really wasn't your aunt.
Mm-hmm. But that's all I've ever known her, Aunt Frances,
and
to this day.
Say that with almost a reverie on your face.
Oh, I do. She's a wonderful lady. She's just been very close to our family, and I feel the same about her, about the Smiths, and about the Caldwells, and just because we grew up in their neighborhood, and that's, I always remember them from my childhood to now, and they have always been so supportive of my family, even after the passing of my father and the passing of my mother. You know, these people have been people to watch over us, and, you know, always let our parents know that, you know, you don't ever have to worry about your children. They have been father figures to us, mother figures to us. When my mother passed away, you know, the only person we needed to call was Mrs. Smith, you know, and people just to help us take care of things that we need to take care of. So we have been watched over by the Chapel Hill community. We really have. And it's not just those few people, and it's just other people in the community that loved and respected our parents. And we feel that love and respect as it comes to us.
Can you remember living on Caldwell Street, what it was like in that community? I guess that was called Potter's Field at the time, or was it Northside then?
I think it was Northside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I never remember that that title, Parsville. That is not something I've ever heard of before. From what I can remember, again, I was so young. I mean, it was just a little neighborhood, and the only people I really knew in the neighborhood were the people on that street.
So you played out on the street?
Well, we played in the neighborhood at each other's homes. Mm-hmm. I remember the Smith's homes and the Powell's homes and the Caldwell's homes.
So you were in and out of each other's
mm-hmm.
homes?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
Fun. We were all around the same age, and we'd play in the summer, and we'd have sleepovers. We'd eat at each other's homes. We just and most of us went to the same church, and it was just like, you know, a big fun little neighborhood of kids, and we all felt like we belonged to each other. We didn't really know what was going on in the outside world.
Was it a shock to move from that area where there were relatively a lot of homes to this area where I assume it was sort of like being in the country?
Oh, it was the country. Dirt roads. There were six or eight homes out of it. And now, what is it, over 100, over 200, 300 homes. And there were only the long dirt roads and homes on this side, homes on that side, and you'd have to travel down the dirt road to even see another home. No street lights. It was a shock, but again, one of the best things were there were other kids in the neighborhood. I mean, it would have been really bad if there were no kids in the neighborhood. But it was other kids in the neighborhood, and all of us were around the same age, and we always found something to get into. You know, we always found something to do. And we couldn't get in but so much trouble. We were out in the country. What were we going to do? Where were we going to go? You know, and nobody was coming out here. So we had the whole grade. This was our hill. We had the whole reign of the neighborhood. So it was we were king of the mountain, and we used to play that too. So, you know, this was our neighborhood, our hill, and if somebody was coming down the street, they had to be coming to see somebody that lived in one of these houses. You know, and it was a dead-end road. So if you were coming down here, basically, you were coming to one of these homes. And but we always found stuff to do. We always played together, so we caught the bus together. Stayed at each other's houses, and it was just another good neighborhood that we grew up in.
Was Piney Mountain Road paved at the time?
Oh, no, it was a dirt road.
And what about Caldwell Street and the other streets?
I think Caldwell Street was paved. I remember Caldwell Street being paved.
Mm-hmm. What about the other streets there in North Side? Remember if they were paved?
Most of the main streets were paved. Most of the main streets were paved. Columbia, Church. I remember those being paved.
Places like McDade and other streets like that.
Now, they may have been dirt. I think they may have been dirt. Mm-hmm. Dirt roads.
What was housing like in that general area?
Oh, I really couldn't comment on that. Other than really my little neighborhood.
Which was a nice neighborhood.
Which was a nice, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you have central heat, central air?
No. It was central. I mean, I'm sure it was probably oil heat. No air conditioning, no. No air conditioning.
Attic fan?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Your mother had a college degree.
Uh-huh.
Your father had a college degree.
Uh-huh.
Did you feel any different from the rest of Northside, which was, I mean, I guess you would be in the upper socioeconomic class in that area.
Probably during that time period.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Probably during that time period. No, I felt no different, although I knew my parents were educators. But no different. I felt no difference at that time.
Did you feel any jealousy from others?
No, but you know, growing up, you always have, going to school, you know, you always have people that pick on other people. You know, you always have that. So, why they may necessarily have been picking, you know, because I was easily a crybaby, I would cry in a minute. I still do that now. But you would easily have people that picked on people, you know, at times, but It either was because I had long hair or, you know, just those little African-American type things that go on. But not that I felt no different.
So let me ask you about the long hair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my remembrances of my African-American friends, I don't remember any of them having long hair.
Mm-hmm.
They had nappy hair, and after there was a certain period where they had big, bushy hair.
Mm-hmm.
And was having long hair a sign of anything, or what can you say about that?
Well, the only thing I can say about that is there have been, certain stereotypes of light skin and long hair, and I was the lightest person in my family. My other sisters are just a little darker than I am. And there have been stereotypes within the African American community about, different skin tones, different lengths of hair. I know I couldn't wait. I loved it. We had to beg our parents to let us wear afros. They would not let us wear afros. We just had to beg them, please let us wear afros. And then when cornrows came out, please let us wear cornrows, because they didn't want us to wear cornrows. So we were rebelling. When I was in junior high school, we took out cheerleading pictures with cornrows in our hair. All of us, all the black cheerleaders, took pictures with cornrows in our hair. And they just had, our parents had a fit when they saw those pictures. But that was just our way of rebelling with the time, because cornrows were in and afros were in. And when they finally let us wear afros, we were just so happy that we got to have my head. Humongous afro, like Angela Davis. I felt so good that I had this humongous afro. But those stereotypes which still go on in some sense today with the light skin and the dark skin, and those just a lot of idiosyncrasies that happen within the African American community.
Light skin meaning that they're treated a little different?
Treated a little differently, just
treated
like the house
better.
Slaves and the field slaves, and the house slaves are normally the light skin. So it's just that same thing that you grow up with something. You grow up with something.
What did it mean to you to be able to have cornrows and an afro?
You're identifying with your African American, your African roots, and your African culture, and what was going on within the culture at that time.
So you're bright-eyed and smiling right now,
mm-hmm.
and obviously it meant a lot to you
mm-hmm.
to be able to identify with a past.
Mm-hmm. To identify a past and to feel like you're in the norm of what was happening with other African-American youth across the United States at that time, because the end thing was cornrows, and then we were in the end thing. And so to be able to do that also brought your African heritage. Because cornrows are of our African heritage.
And were you taking pride in that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Why was that important to you?
Because as we moved into the junior high stage, we began to obviously draw closer to our African American roots. I mean, you had been segregated and integrated. Then when you get to junior high, you learn more in your African studies, in your social studies class. And you had Black History Day or Black History Week, which we didn't have, it wasn't as prominent when you were in elementary school, but when you got to junior high school, you had input into what that day or what that week was going to be about. So we could join the Afro Society, African-American club. You could be a part of a club that had all African-American people in it, and we just began to embrace more of our African-American culture, because we saw that we needed to do that in order to feel more things equal within the school. And a lot of those things came out from the same things that went on with my sister. They sat in to have an Afro day, and then there was a day, so we had to continue and carry those things on.
Did you sit in?
No, I didn't sit in.
The junior high?
No.
Did anyone sit in?
No, it wasn't going on then when I was a junior high.
So you were there.
But we rebelled not that we rebelled, but we were very steadfast in what we felt we should get and the equality that should take place as African-American students.
We ran for offices. We made sure we were in clubs. We made sure that we were a part of the status quo within the school. And we just made sure that we were a part of all that.
Now, you went to grammar school or elementary school from 67 through 69, is that right?
Right, 69. Mm-hmm. 69, yeah.
And just the time when all the problems were occurring in the high school.
Mm-hmm.
Did that have any bearing on where you went to school at Estes Elementary?
Oh, no. I doubt it. I think the reason I went to Estes Hills is because we moved on Titan. Otherwise, I would have been going to Glenwood. Or otherwise, if we were still been living on Caldwell Street, we would have been going to Glenwood Elementary.
What was the difference between being at an all-black elementary school and an integrated elementary school?
Well, from what I can remember, I had all-black teachers and all-black kids in the class, and it was just, I loved my teachers. They were just wonderful people. They were just a delight to be around. They were bright and cheery. They had your interest at heart. They cared, to me, they cared a lot about how they taught you, the sincerity, just the genuine care about you as a student. And I think they did that to everybody. You know, you could see it and you could feel it in the classroom.
Whether they were advanced or not advanced.
Advanced or not advanced. Because if there were not advanced students in my class, I would have never known.
Do you know if they had tracking at that time? You didn't. Well, that wouldn't be at the grammar school level, I wouldn't think. That might have been in the junior high. Certainly
not. Certainly probably not.
So you got this feeling of caring by the teachers. Mm-hmm. Did the teachers visit your home?
They were all free. I mean, my parents were educators. So I may have had a plus. I mean, you know.
Did you feel you got treated any different because your parents were in education?
No, if anything, they got treated more strict. They were all friends. Some of them probably went, half of them probably went to school together. College, you know, so. No, I think that if anything, they were on us even more. I always knew that I had to excel. Always. I never, you know.
Did your parents talk about you going to college?
We always knew we were going to college. It wasn't a thought that you weren't going to college. Not go to college, that was never a thought that you weren't going to go to college. We always were going to go to college.
So your parents had high expectations.
Oh, absolutely.
And your uncle?
Oh, absolutely.
What was his name, Dr.?
Dr. David Cook.
Mm-hmm. Was he a physician at Lincoln?
Yes, he had his own private practice, but he also was attending at Lincoln. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was the feeling?
My grandfather was a farmer. See, so our heritage goes back through education. So it's not just first, second. So it was always to be expected.
Carry on tradition.
Oh, absolutely.
So you had caring teachers, made you feel you knew them.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents knew them socially. Was there anything else about the teachers that stands out in your mind? Anything you can remember? Discipline?
Discipline. Class was discipline. And I never remember a lot of problems in class. Don't remember, you know, discipline problems, although I'm sure there were. And again,
you're doing really well.
My memory's not really good.
Yeah, you're doing
great.
Do you recall the coat room? What about sports at the elementary school and the playground? What was the playground like, and what kind of games did you play there?
I played German dodgeball.
We
played German dodgeball. That was godly. I can't hardly remember how to play it. But that's what we used to play, German dodgeball. Where you have a tank, has a big square. No, it's not a square. You have a team here, and a person on the outside and a person on the outside. And you have to throw the ball across, you can catch the ball. I hardly remember it, but I do remember German dodgeball. We played German dodgeball. During break.
Mm-hmm. Was your playground paved?
At Essex Hills, a portion of it was.
Mm-hmm. What about at Frankfurter Ground?
No, dirt.
And what about the books that you had at Frankfurter Ground? Were they new or were they used?
Majority of them were used. In between. I remember I used to have my parents enroll me in a book club.
So you were a reader?
Yeah.
What was the book? Was it a book club where it was mailed to you?
Yeah, when it was mailed to me, get a book
club. And who made sure you read it?
They would just, before I was getting my next book, I just had to make sure I had read it. And then it was just, I was excited enough to make sure that I knew I had another book coming. So I needed to read my book before the next book came.
Now, were these books about African Americans?
No.
Or are they books?
Just children's books.
Children's books.
Oh, wow. Just all kinds of just children's books.
You didn't see color in the books. You don't remember color in the
books. No, I don't remember color. Children's books. Something in the childhood home.
Were you in any clubs in elementary school?
Not in elementary school, but very, very active in junior high.
What was it like when you went to Estes Hills?
Major culture shock. Just, I remember my fourth grade teacher and oh, goodness, Chief, I remember her to this day. A little white lady. And that's all I can remember. I mean, you know, I wasn't a happy camper, let me say. So that was a very difficult, my fourth grade year was very difficult. I wasn't happy.
What was it about her that made you unhappy?
She wasn't like any of my other teachers I had ever had.
How was she different?
First, she was white. That was my first white teacher. And she wasn't as friendly. She wasn't as, I did not feel that caring, motherly atmosphere as I had felt previously. Classes were larger. And of course you didn't feel that special attention to, especially being in a new environment.
What percentage of the class that you were in was black and African American?
No, there probably couldn't have been any more than five or six.
And this was 67?
Couldn't have been any more than five or six.
Did you?
In my class, in that particular class. But I'm sure, you know, there were more African American students within all the different fourth grade classes.
What would you say, 30 students?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you were like 1/6 of the class. Did you feel prejudice from other students or teachers?
Okay.
So you felt that you had blocked it out?
I had blocked it out. I can't remember that.
You remember name calling or jostling?
I do know my fifth grade teacher and my sixth grade teachers were black.
Did that make a difference?
Yes, sure it did. And there were more black students in those classes.
Were they there out of choice for the black teacher? Or just don't know?
I don't know.
Just luck of the draw.
Must have been the luck of the draw.
So 69, you left elementary school and went to the junior high school. Which junior high was it?
Phillips.
What was Phillips like in 1969, 1970?
Gosh, lots of students coming from a lot of different places, bigger, much bigger. Having to find your niche, finding your how you fit in, finding your group of people, meeting new people, trying to figure out how to belong. Mm-hmm.
When you were in Estes Hill, did you have lunch with a mixed group?
In the big cafeteria. Mm-hmm.
So blacks didn't segregate themselves.
No, you basically were in class. You know, you went with your class to lunch.
So there was a mixing of sorts of cultures there.
Uh-huh.
And did that same thing go on at the junior high school level?
Well, you had lunch period, so you could tell, students would begin to group off. We did group off eventually. Mm-hmm. You would hang with some of your elementary school compadres, you know, for a while, but then as you get to mingle and then you get to learn more people, and then it began to group off from between 8th grade and 9th grade, I mean, you know, as time went on.
Now, about that time, there was a lot of action going on at the high school, a lot of changes that were being demanded by the African American students. Did you see any of that attitude of demand for change at the junior high school level among the African American students?
Probably not as prominently as they had in the years before then, because that's when a lot of changes took place, and we were basically trying to continue to reinforce those changes that were taking place. So I think our class was more involved in integrating and infiltrating the clubs and the activities and the cheerleading squad again, the being in the French club and being in the Spanish club and having your African American culture club and being on the newspaper staff and running for offices and having some role in leadership. And those were the types of things that were instilled in us from what had happened earlier on from the sit-ins. So we were like trying to take it to the next level, which would be more involved in the leadership roles of what was going on with schools, making sure that we were in the advanced classes. I mean, you know, it was like, you know, we were supposed to be in advanced classes. You know, where are the black kids that are in advanced classes? You know, so making sure that we were in those types of classes and making sure we were not being left out in any of those types of arenas.
Now, where did this leadership come from that was...
It came from my brothers and sisters from high school. I mean, you know, you need to be in a leadership role. Most of our brothers and sisters were in leadership roles, and we need to be in leadership roles too, and you need to start here. You need to start now, and this is what you need to do, so you'll be ready when you get to this particular point. So it all trickled down to, you know, being involved in leadership roles.
So it was older siblings
mm-hmm.
who were helping with
mm-hmm.
a direction for
mm-hmm.
you,
absolutely.
What to do.
Mm-hmm. And it could have been subconsciously being done just because you know that these types of things are happening. I mean, my older sister never told me, well, you need to do so-and-so. She didn't never have to tell me that. It was obvious that I needed to do so-and-so. It was obvious I needed to be involved in this. It was obvious that these types of things were going on, not only in our community, but across the whole United States. And how are you going to make change, and how are you going to affect change unless you're a part of the status quo?
Well, I think that's really a very interesting comment, and maybe you can address that a little bit more. The influence of what was going on around the country when a child gets to school. Can you remember back?
Well, the country was going through so many important changes, and
education was the key. That's all you were taught. Education was the key. Education is the key to success. Education is the key to having more and doing more and representing your people and being making it to the next level. So in the whole realm of education, we had to make sure that within the school system that we were getting ours and that we were afforded the opportunity to get ours. And so, therefore, you had to achieve, you had to be in this club, and you had to go to this class, and you had to do this, and you had to do that. And most of my friends that I hung around, parents were educators. Again, we get back to that. Most of my friends' parents were educators or were professionals in some sense of the word. And that the achievement was just automatically expected because that's what you learned in your household. That's what you were always around. Achieving.
Did you feel that less was expected of you by your teachers because you were African American?
No. And if they felt that, I never saw that. Because I always was steadfast on that I could do anything that I wanted to do.
What about other African American students? I mean, I've heard that from several people I've talked to, that they just expected less from us. Did you see that? This was 70 on to 76 when you were a junior.
And I guess so. I guess they did expect less of us, especially when you asked to be in an advanced placement class and they ask you why, you know, or try to discourage you of why you should be in that class. Or you get into class and it's only three other black students in the class. It's like, I know it's some more people in the school that's supposed to be in this class. You know, so and I guess it just boils down to what your expectations of yourself are. That's really what it boils down to. Because I never felt that, even though they may have felt that. Because I knew I always was a high achiever and that I was going to do whatever I needed to do and take whatever class that I needed to take and do whatever I needed to do to achieve what I needed to do to go to college, because that's what's expected.
Did you feel that you were called on just the same as the white students, that if you raised your hand, that a teacher would see you and call on you just the same as the white students?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to put words in
your mouth. And I did. Absolutely. I mean, and I guess it, and again, it, you know, it's just, it's at a next era of integration. In our class, I have wonderful white friends to this day that I grew up with from fourth grade on. You know, and we still, our class reunion, I can show you a picture I'm trying to get from. We were all so close because we had that time but we had our problems. I'm not going to say we didn't have our problems. We did not have our spats. I mean, I have had spats with some of my best white friends that we have just had it out, and it was racially motivated, yes. You know, but we've had it out, and we went through whatever we went through, but we're still friends to this day. You know, and I have some white friends that I just know that we're not friends. You know, and it's just basically because they feel the way they do, and I feel the way that I do. But, and the majority of my classes, and I don't see that. I never felt like that I wasn't called on because I was black. I never felt that. I never felt that. I felt that I had, when I was in high school, I felt I had some racist teachers. Just because of how they were, how they taught, what their demeanors were. You know, they tried to be friendly or they tried to be good teachers. I mean, they tried to do what they were supposed to do. And you can see, it's people you can see through. I mean, you can just see through some people that, you know, they really don't want to be there. They really don't want to teach you. They don't think you can achieve. They don't want you in the class, or that you're not going to achieve in my class. And, you know, and there were some teachers in high school that were not personally good teachers and did not know how to teach black kids. See, that's a whole nother issue. That they may not have known how to teach or relate to black kids. And so that could have really been, so my looking at them as racist could have been that they don't know how to communicate to me. They don't know how to get across. They don't know how to teach me. They don't know how to get across to me. They don't understand where I come from. They don't understand. And so me saying that they're racist really could have been their weakness of not being able to teach me as an African-American student. So therefore, I label them as racist. But you look at that now, and when you're a teenager, you don't look at it that way. They're just a racist teacher, and you tell everybody, stay away from so-and-so's class because you're not going to get an A in there no matter what you do. You may as well go over here and go to this class and take this class. And that's really what happened. If somebody was being labeled that way, or you knew that they were a hard teacher and that they wouldn't cut you any slack, or class wasn't interesting, or they would never call on you in class, whatever, you stayed away from that teacher. And you took a class from another teacher, or you changed your focus to a teacher that you could communicate with. So looking back on it, a lot of that is that white teachers have problems teaching African-American students, and that is the problem that you have today. That's why there's so many problems in the school system, because white teachers do not know how to teach and poor, some African-American teachers don't know how to teach African-American students. I mean, so you got the same thing.
What is the difference in technique between teaching an African-American and teaching a white?
I don't know. I'm not an educator. I don't know. But I'm just saying, it's rapport. It's how you come across. It's, you got to have some kind of technique. I couldn't begin. I said I was never going to be an educator. My parents were educators. My sisters are educators. I was never going to be a teacher. Because firstly, I don't have patience. You got to have patience. You have to have patience. You have to have a sincere care for children and for the whole learning process. That's one thing about black teachers. They are some patient people. My parents were so patient. I always told my mother, I don't know, well, how you are so patient with working, especially working with special children. Oh, she loved those kids as if they were her own. And that's what I saw. That's what I saw in her. She loved those kids. She would do anything for those kids. She would. Oh, she just did such wonderful things. And those, some of those same students that she taught, I see them as adults now, and they just talk about how much they loved her and how caring she was and how she taught them and how she was sincerely interested in their well-being. And that's what you need. That's what kids need today. And there needs to be there is a technique to teaching African-American kids, and if it's different than teaching white kids, so what is different? The end process is to have an educated child. So what that it's different over here and different over there? But we got to find some teachers that are able to do that. And I don't think, and unfortunately, the whole teaching profession has been so just demoralized. And so nobody wants to be teachers anymore, and they don't pay, of all people in the world, they don't pay enough money to our teachers. Our teachers are building the foundation for our whole United States of America. And you're going to pay teachers minimal wages, and they are the ones that are preparing the people of tomorrow. How stupid. Don't mean to get into politics, but how stupid. It makes no sense. And we say we care about our children. We care about our children, and we pay teachers pennies, and we don't give them opportunities for advanced education, and if the teachers are the future.
Do you think that the teachers, when you were in grammar school and black school, that those teachers were respected in the community?
Oh, absolutely.
Was that an aspiration of black people to be a teacher? Was that a high aspiration?
Oh, that's all we could be. What else could we be? Teachers? We couldn't be but nothing but teachers or laborers. That was the next profession. What else could we be at that particular point? But that was what we were.
And what about today? Would you contrast that with the situation of teaching today? Do you think it's still the same?
No, because there's so many other opportunities for it. That's why you don't have that many people going into teaching. There's so many other things that we can do now. And that is because, you know, things have just evolved, but there's so many other things that we can do now. But yes, teachers were, because then the teachers were a part of the community. See, that's what's so different now. Mm-hmm. The teachers you have today, they might live in Raleigh and work in Chapel Hill. The teachers of old were a part of the communities, were in the churches, were the people that you saw when you went to the grocery store, might have been your neighbor. That's what's different. The teachers were part of the community.
What about discipline? Was there a difference in discipline between, I know it's a long time ago, between your African-American teacher and the teacher in the integrated school, black or white?
Mm-hmm.